Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott. We're joined this week by Elizabeth Licata, editor of Buffalo Spree.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on again.
Great to have you here. We're going to talk about Buffalo's historic grain elevators today, specifically Silo City. Some plans are in the making for this, but it could take decades before it comes to fruition.
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of more activity, certainly, of actually using our, you know, mostly empty grain elevators for something than we've seen in decades. Since we're seeing a lot of young people, a lot of artists, some theater people who are actually using this one particular complex that is kept up enough, you know, has a manager. It's owned by a wonderful Buffalo entrepreneur, Rick Smith. We're seeing these structures used for plays, for tours, for big art events like last summer's City of Night, and then the wonderful theater production American Grain. I believe the first time I was ever in one of these was in 2011 when the National Trust was here. They had an event there, and they actually had some musicians inside them. The sound is great. The lighting is wonderful. It's like nothing else to walk through these grain elevators and look up and you see these just looming spaces. For the American Grain production, you looked up and there was somehow they had suspended a dancer from the very, very top, and the dancer was covered in lights. So these little pinpoints of lights just got closer and closer to you as she was slowly lowered down. And it was astounding. That was Nimbus Dance was the dance company that was brought in to work with Dan Shanahan on that production. And what we're seeing is that I think the grain elevators can be used in very interesting ways. Are they going to be purchased by someone and made into condominiums next year? Probably not. Can we still get limited uses out of them that celebrates them for exactly what they are? Yes, just like Central Terminal. I don't think anyone is proposing that we pull down Central Terminal. Central Terminal is not going to be turned into condos next year either. But it's there. It offers us many opportunities, and we're making the most of them.
Now, could a grain elevator be turned into housing if the investment was there?
I think that they've done all kinds of things with them. I have heard of some of them being turned into housing and other uses. If you look at, I don't have them in front of me, but other cities throughout the Rust Belt, I guess you would call it. Some of them have reused. It is possible to reuse the grain elevators. And who knows, we might see it. Look at all the other construction we're seeing downtown. Look at all the other buildings that no one thought would be reused that are being reused.
Yeah. Now, Silo City, you said, has a progressive owner. What about the other facilities? Are they just rotting away, or these are built so strongly that
it's
no
strong
problem?
And they're not going to rot away at any fast rate, Mark. but yes, some of them are being completely ignored by their owners. The Great Northern Elevator, I think, would be one of those. I'm pretty sure it's owned by Archer Daniels Midland, who's doing nothing with it. But they're not tearing it down either. The only one that we have seen torn down, and I understood it took a lot of effort, was the one, the H.O. Oates one, that was torn down to do the casino downtown, which we're reaping such wonderful benefits from. Making
another topic. So you're quite bullish then on the future of our grain elevators.
I am bullish on the future of the grain elevators because I think that people need to understand that nothing is going to happen overnight, but there's also no reason to scream tear them down. First of all, the expense of tearing them down, I can't imagine what would make it worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do what we can with them. To me, they're like sculptures. They were influential, as I'm sure you know, Mark, to modern architecture. You can go inside. You can use them. They're wonderful spaces for art.
Let's move on to another venue in Buffalo, and that would be Mark Twain's Carriage House.
Yes.
And there's a new development going up where the Cloister Restaurant used to be, and that's going to sort of hide the Twain Carriage House.
Well, I live right near there, and it's really fascinating to watch the construction. I'm very pleased that there's going to be a building at that corner, which was mainly vacant. Twain's house was at 472. See, we have an article about a new biography of Mark Twain's years in Buffalo in the current Spree. Twain's house was at 472, was torn down. So that left a space, but then you had the cloister, which didn't, and a big parking lot in front. Then it was Business First, maybe some other owners, I'm not sure. But after that building was torn down. So then you could see the carriage house alone for the first time. But now it's beginning, it's just this really curious site. It's beginning to, beams are going up around it, and there's now going to be office space and a lot of residential space there. I don't know if we'll be able to see the carriage house. So if anybody does want to see the carriage house, you should drive by Delaware and Virginia and take a last look at it, because a lot of it will probably likely be obscured by the construction. But I'm not saying that construction is not a good thing. It is a good thing. It's always good to fill in our corners. That particular corner has two other vacant corners, and I'd love to see them filled up as well. Corners are important.
Shouldn't this carriage house, though, be renovated by some entrepreneur and developed into a tourist attraction?
I think the same developer, it's Carl Frisland, I think they are going to use the carriage house as a residential unit, and I'm happy, I'm sorry if I'm incorrect on that. I don't know if it's a small building. There was talk, I don't know if you remember, there was talk of a Twain Museum and another couple other sites on the west in Allentown, really, and it never happened because, Twain was only here for 18 months. So it just, just could never really rev up the energy to do that.
Congratulations are in order to Buffalo Spree. Won a preservation award?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, the Buffalo Preservation Buffalo Niagara gives preservation awards. I think this might be the sixth or the seventh one. They've been giving them since at least 2009, as far back as I could see. And they're giving us an award. They haven't said what for yet. I'm guessing either for journalism or maybe for education, awareness raising, one of those things. And that's not unusual. Western New York Heritage has received well-deserved award from them. And I believe that Mark Summers from the Buffalo News won an award last year. But normally their awards are for adaptive reuse of buildings, as they should be. And so a lot of times you'll see developers getting awards and architectural firms getting awards. And it's interesting to me, is looking at the awards that they have this year. They have us on there. I don't think we're that out of the ordinary. But they also have Buffalo's Young Preservationists, which is a group that I'm very fond of. I think they're doing a lot of good work. And they're sort of making the case for old buildings, but they're a bunch of young people, and so that's kind of nice. But they're activists. I don't think I've seen awards being given to activists who work for preservation. They don't always win either. I see Kathy Mecca from the Columbus Neighborhood Group down by the Peace Bridge.
Yeah.
I don't know what these awards, the names, what they're actually getting awards for. But again, she's an activist for that neighborhood. And that's a neighborhood where there have been recent demolitions.
I wanted to talk about that because sometimes we celebrate the good that is happening in preservation in Buffalo. But in the past month, a couple of stories from the other side, the Bethlehem Steel Building, unfortunately, coming down now, and these few homes, including the historic mansion on Busta Avenue, making way for the Peace Bridge expansion.
Well, it's not the Peace Bridge isn't.
Yeah. You're right. The plaza expansion. Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
I don't really know what. In fact, they're saying the Public Bridge Authority is actually saying that it's just for green space. So who knows what's going to happen. It's as clear as mud. Nobody knows really what's going to happen there. But yeah, these are we wrote about the Wilkinson Mansion and we wrote about the Bethlehem Steel North office in our Preservation Ready series. And it's sad to see these structures that you researched and that, you know, there have been a lot of community advocacy and court cases. Both of them, you know, went to court unsuccessfully to get both the Bustai houses and the North office saved. And they were unsuccessful. And that is sad. But that's why I think it's so great that the advocates are getting the awards even when they can't always save it, because it's still important to do the advocacy. The advocacy is still educational, and you have these cases to point to when you go on and do other advocacy. And I think what really tells the tale is, like, what happens in these sites when these buildings are taken down? We're in such a big rush to take down this Bethlehem Steel North office. What's going to happen there? Is there going to be some fabulous complex there?
No.
It seems unlikely.
At least
what was the rush?
Yeah, yeah.
What was the rush? But it's these are sad endings. We've had some happy endings, but these are sad endings.
Do you buy into, I almost see a conspiracy on the part of the demolition contractor because the right when the judge granted approval for the demolition, some of the front windows were knocked out, but the rest of the building was standing for at least a couple of weeks. As I drove by, it's
well,
like,
they're...
well, we're going to punch out just a you know, but
the
but
nice parts,
yeah, but leave you know, most of the building still standing.
I'm not really sure. I mean, if they're going to take it down, it would make sense to me to deconstruct it. I mean, there's asbestos issues. At least save some of the architectural remnants. I know that the Steel Museum would have loved to have had those round windows, the copper, you know, those incredible ornamental round copper.
And maybe that's what they did. Maybe they took them out and
that's not what I've heard.
Okay.
And I still don't know. I've been following that. Yeah. I know that there's been communication, but I don't know if anyone has actually, you know, received them or made any promises to salvage them. But I don't know. I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. Some people think that they punched out the ornamental parts first to make the building look uglier so that people would drive by and think, oh, of course they're tearing that down. But I really grew quite. I drove by that building a lot, you know, my way to, say, the botanical gardens, or and because the turn is right there, and grew quite fond of it. But certainly, my advocacy is nothing compared to the people who actually camped out and lived in front of there, and all the preservationist groups who held rallies there, and really, and also did their best to, there was much more than that that happened. They did their best to get the owner together with the mayor, to get stays, to negotiate. They're almost like ambassadors and just to try to get some sort of deal and, you know, a compromise. If you'll leave it up for this long, we'll try to bring in some developers. There were rumors that, in fact, developers had approached the owner and had been repulsed. There is certainly, there may have been some untruths about the structural integrity of the building, because reports were found that it was perfectly sound, and yet the owners and, of course, the Tonawanda mayor were saying that it wasn't. So
Lackawanna mayor.
Lackawanna mayor were saying that it was unsound, and apparently that wasn't true. So there's a lot of... there's a lot of deception that seems to have gone on in this rush to get this building. You almost want to know why. I mean, who's benefiting from it?
Yeah.
That's what you have to ask.
Yeah. One more thing before we wrap up. The April issue has 34 of Western New York's most beautiful people. I'm not on the list.
But, I know. Well,
34 other people were. How do you select them?
Mark, we had to make some really hard choices. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, I'm teasing.
A lot of late night deliberation.
How does this work? I'd be interested in how.
It's kind of nuts. Yeah. I mean, beauty is very subjective. So it's not. Fortunately, I have 60 writers and my photographers, and we use 4 different photographers for this as well. And I guess it's, you know, that people said, well, you know, names were suggested. But I think what the interesting part is that all the names of the people who were suggested, these were not models for, I think there's one model in the whole list, but these were people who do things in the community. They are winemakers. They are entrepreneurs. They own companies. They're TV reporters. They're advocates for the disabled. They're artists. They're directors of theater companies. So they're business people. So you've got.
And a range of ages, too.
Yes, yeah. Directors of yes, we've got ages from people in their 20s. To people in their 80s. And
wonderful.
So, yeah, so they're football players. So it's a really fun group, and I'm certain that we could do this issue if we wanted to, like 12 months a year and have 34 more different beautiful people, and, you know, so.
But I like what you said. I mean, beauty, it's not just their looks. It's what they do, too, that you know, makes a difference, as you said, the person who helps the disabled.
Yeah. It has to, because all those things go into your mind when you decide that someone's beautiful. It's you know, unless you're just flipping through a magazine. And anyways, it's a fun thing to do. I'm sure many of us, even though we might not admit it, we love to pick up the People magazine, you know, America's 25 most beautiful people. I think when you're standing in the line at the store, you're going to pick it up. You're going to look.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we were hoping.
Elizabeth, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mark. It's always fun talking to you.
Elizabeth Licata, editor of Buffalo Spree. I'm Mark Scott, WBFO News.